Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 491 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Today's episode is sort of a special one. I recently sat down and had a conversation with author Erin A. Craig. She wrote The House of Salt and Sorrows. We actually don't talk about her book, though. Well, we do a little bit. It turns out Erin and I share a love for the book Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. And because there's the new Netflix special out, we decided to chat about Rebecca and our shared love of gothic horror and gothic literature and all that fun stuff. And so that's what this is about. So this is all about, fantastic, fabulous genre of gothic literature. So we talk about Rebecca, we talk about her book, we talk about Mexican gothic, we talk about The Haunting of Bly House. There's a lot going on in this episode. It was so much fun. I'm so happy I got to talk with someone else who loves Rebecca as much as I do. So if you want to get a hold of us, you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We are on Twitter and Instagram at probooknerds. And you can always email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. I think that is everything for now. I hope you have a lovely Monday. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Erin Craig on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. I'm very excited because we're doing something a little bit different today. With me, I have author Erin Craig. She wrote the incredible House of Salt and Sorrows. While we are going to talk about her book a little bit, that's actually not why she's here. But first, thank you, Erin, for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so we're doing something a little bit different. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but one of my favorite books is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. And there's a new Netflix movie that I think is actually out today on the day that we're recording this.
I haven't seen it yet.
I know. I was trying to figure, I'm like, will I have time to watch before this? But you're also a fan of Rebecca. And so we're going to talk Rebecca. We're going to talk your book. We're going to talk about gothic novels. It's going to be a great time.
Excellent. my favorite things.
I know. There's so much good stuff. There's so much. Yeah. I read Rebecca. I remember I think in like fifth grade. It was one of my mom's favorite books. So I was very familiar with it. And then I got it, I believe, at a Scholastic Book Fair.
I have a 4-year-old, and that was my favorite part of her going to preschool last year, was getting the book flyers. I was like, oh, they still do this. This is my favorite thing.
And so they had it there, and I bought it because I was familiar with it because of my mom. And I just remember, like, there were certain parts where I would be reading it and I would come running out to the kitchen because I just was just like, what is happening? keep reading it. Yeah. So I guess, like, I don't even know where to start with this. Yeah, I think for, you know, like, Rebecca's just one of those books that's just like always been there. And I love that it's sort of getting this resurgence with the new Netflix movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited to see. I contemplated like staying up last night to midnight to watch it like drop, and then I was like, no, this is insane. Like, I've got to be at the fun. but I am really excited to see what they do with it, and like, I love looking at the different the film adaptations that have come before. Mm-hmm. Like, I just recently watched the Charles Dance, it's like 1997 BBC one or something.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with Georgina Darcy as the second Mrs. De Winters. And I forgot how much I loved it. Like, Faye Dunaway has her appearance, and then Charles Dance is like the sexy male love interest, just cracks me up more than I can possibly say. Right. But I'm excited to see what they do with it, and like whether we'll actually see ghosts. Like, that's always the big thing. Like, is it going to be a ghost? Is it a memory? Is it like, you know, the whole sheet and chains thing? Like, I'm excited to see what they do.
Me too. I'm particularly interested to see what they do with the ending, because I know a lot of people are familiar with the Hitchcock version, which changed the ending just slightly, for like to get around the Hollywood moral code. It's a whole thing. So, I'm like, but I'm pretty sure they're probably going to keep the original ending and like what actually happened a little bit. So yeah, I'm excited.
Well, and also like, which is it going to be, like the my daughter's peeking in. like, is it going to be like the actual book ending? Is it like that weird second epilogue that was kind of like also the prologue? It'll be, yeah, I'm excited to see which route they go.
Yeah. I'm very excited for Kristen Scott Thomas as Mrs. Danvers. As soon as that was announced.
When I saw her on the trailer, I was like, yes, this is the perfect casting.
It is so good. It is so good. It's just, yeah, I'm really excited. And it's just that book that's been around for almost 100 years, and it's still so popular, which I love. And I, you know, like, I've read it countless times, and I'm glad it's getting sort of a new audience.
Mm-hmm. And I love, like, that's one of the books, like, I think my first time reading it, I was in high school, and I totally did not appreciate it, because I was like, bring on the ghosts, like, let's see how scary this can go. I'm like, where is the ghost? Like, they just talk about her. Like, what's going on with this? This is not scary at all. And then later on in life, I've identified with Rebecca in ways I never not Rebecca, sorry, the second Mrs. Dwenders. I identify with her in ways I never expected to, because now I've become a second wife. and my husband is a little bit older than me, and he is nothing like Maxim. I preface all of this. Yeah, so I'm finding, like, as I reread, like, later on in life, I'm identifying with the second Mrs. De Winters a lot more than I ever expected to, because, like, in my early 20s, you know, she's just this very mousy, like, why doesn't she speak up for herself? Mm-hmm. And now, like having married an older man and knowing that, you know, he had a wife before me, like, there's things like, oh, I totally get why you're not doing this, because, like, why stir the pot? Right. A lot of stuff. And so totally, like, I think she still should have spoken up for herself quite a bit more. But there's definitely different, it's funny to see how the book grows with you throughout the stages of life.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I think, and I remember that was sort of the first time I had read a book where you don't know the main character's name. And that was just from like a reading and craft standpoint. I was like, what is this?
Oh, that was the first time I kept, because I was like, why don't they call her Rebecca? Why don't they call, like, I love having the entire title be this character that isn't really even there. I mean, right. She is, but she's not, but the craft of Daphne, like, oh,
I know. It's so good. So it's sort of, you know, Rebecca kind of falls under this idea of like gothic fiction, and I always have a hard time kind of describing, I know gothic fiction and gothic horror when I've read it, but I have a hard time sort of defining it.
Dad, we just finished watching The Haunting of Bly Manor, mm-hmm. which I think is beautifully and gothic and wonderful and everything I loved. And my dad watched it also, and like at the end, I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. Like the last two episodes, and no spoilers at all. But like the last two episodes were like the most brilliant, beautiful thing I've ever seen. And I was crying and all this stuff. And my dad was just like, this was stupid. It wasn't scary at all. And I'm like, no, that's the beauty of it. And like, there's one line that gives no spoilers away, but there, one of the characters says, like, you know, you said you were going to tell me a ghost story and this was a love story. And then the narrator says, well, it's both. It's the same thing. And I loved that. And it just, that for me summed up all of the gothic everything. Like, so well, like, it's a love story, it's a ghost story, like they're so interchangeable and entangled together. And it's just kind of that quiet horror, like if you go into gothic fiction expecting the ghosts like I did in high school, you're gonna be disappointed. But I think, like, the older I get, the more I appreciate gothic fiction for just like that quiet, understated horror of, like, you know, this is a life, and these are these horrible, horrific things that can happen, and no, it's not necessarily, you know, ghosts going down the hall scaring you, but just like what your imagination can conjure can sometimes be more scary than like what you would expect, you know, Stephen King to come like out of a closet with a chainsaw or whatever at you.
I like the description, quiet horror, that yeah, and this idea of like a ghost story and a love story kind of all together. And speaking of The Haunting of Bly Manor, I remember on Twitter recently, Sylvia Moreno Garcia, who wrote Mexican Gothic, which was fantastic. She had a thing where people were saying, you know, people who had read, who had watched The Haunting of Hill House were sort of expecting a very similar type of story with The Haunting of Bly Manor. And she was talking about Gothic fiction and how it's more of a slow burn because it is sort of all kind of, it's there, but not, and it's sort of more atmospheric and you kind of feel these things around you, but it's not going to be like jump scares like you might get in other forms of horror.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I think I retweeted it because it was so beautiful.
I think I too.
She's so, I love her.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love, I really love that form of horror, and there's so much, like, I think there's so much like actual horror that happens in life that people don't necessarily count as horror because it's not, you know, a monster or vampire or werewolf man chasing you, you know, across a lavender covered moor or anything. But I there's at the end of Bly Manor, there's a moment where they're talking about, you know, that kind of thing on a wedding day when you kind of realize, like, I love this person so much with all my heart and soul. Oh, they're going to die at some point. This is going to suck. that is the most terrifying horror of all, is like falling in love with someone, realizing like, oh gosh, this eventually is going, like, it's till death do us part. That is kind of the culmination of everything. And like, that's what I love about the Gothic novels, is they do take that, you know, very awful real horror of life and just put it in a really beautiful way. and you know, obviously have like a really great house and costumes and gowns and things to go with this. You've got to dress it up a little.
That's true. They usually do have really good houses and,
like, and their nightgowns, like, where do they get the nightgowns? That's what I want.
Oh,
like,
God.
All the lace, I would get totally tangled up. Like, if I actually wore a nightgown like that, I'd never sleep because I'd be like trying to like smother myself with it.
Right.
But
yeah,
my goodness, it'd be fun to walk down a hallway with this.
With like, you're just like holding one of the big like candelabras as you're like walking down.
And they somehow never catch all that lace on fire. Like, it's a talent. Being a gothic heroine is a very good real talent.
it is a very real talent. Oh God, that's funny. Yeah. Mexican Gothic, I think, is probably like the best book I've read so far this year. It encapsulates everything I love about the genre, but puts it in a time period and a place that I wasn't, like, I'm not at all familiar with. And so I think she did a really good job of sort of combining these two. Mexican Gothic, I mean, like, it's in the title, but it was so well done and so good.
And I loved having like the time period in like, it was like late 50s, early 60s with everything, because like, you don't associate that necessarily, like, when you think of horror from that genre, it's, you're starting to get kind of into the slashers, even kind of a little into the teen slasher stuff. And like, to have, you know, the creepy quiet house and like the gaslighting and all this stuff, like, that's not necessarily the horror that you associate with that time period. And I thought she pulled that off in such a beautiful way.
She
was so good. And like the villain of it like solidifies my stance on pizza. I've been right all these years.
Yep. Oh yeah. That, yeah. And I think, and I, it sort of kept me guessing, which I liked as well. Like you, like I could totally identify with the main character and being unsure of who you can trust throughout the whole thing, which as someone who reads a lot, it's sometimes hard to sort of trick me, I guess is the best way to put it. Cause I see a lot of things coming and I'm just like, oh, okay. But
can I definitely did not guess.
Yeah.
Because it was like, is it ghosts? Is it gaslighting? Like what is it we're dealing with? And then when it all unraveled, it was like, oh, this was so good.
It was for sure. Are there any other gothic horror novels that you really like?
I really enjoyed, I just did a big, September is Women in Horror Month. And so I was going through and like my bookshelves are a disaster right now because I was pulling out all the women authors of everything. But I remember, I was going through everything. I rediscovered Kirsten White's The Dark Descent of Elizabeth Frankenstein. It came out 3 or 4 years ago, I think now. And it's a YA retelling of Frankenstein, but as seen through Victor Frankenstein's like childhood companion friend who turns into a love interest. And like, she doesn't know what's going on with him. She knows something's weird. And he's always been kind of like this creepy, mad scientist-y kind of child who likes to experiment on awful things. And then like you're seeing, like you don't see like the actual creation of the monster, you know, like as he's building it or anything like that. But you see her at their family estate and all of the things, like she keeps his dark secrets for her personal reasons that get played throughout the book. I love that book. It's so good. And like the ending, there's like just a little epilogue zinger at the end, which I loved. And Kirsten White does horror very well. And that one really, really stuck with me. And then I think my all time favorite is like anything Susan Hill writes.
Oh yeah.
I used to be, in theater. I was a production stage manager before I had my daughter. And, I think this is my favorite show I've ever worked on. And I've directed it a couple of times. I've seen it more times than I should probably admit to as a play. But the Woman in Black, I just absolutely love. It's totally one of those like creepy English manors, isolated because there's this causeway that goes underwater, and so the house is cut off for a good portion of the day. And then it's just very much like, is that a thing in the shadows? Is it shadows? Is it my mind? Like, what's going on? What is haunting me? Oh gosh, this is horrible. Make it end. I love her stuff because it's always very much like, it could be a ghost. It could be my mind. Like, I think that the, like your mind playing tricks on you is one of the greatest spooky things that you can read about, because as a reader, you know, you start to question things. I always, with all of the Hill House and Bly Manor, like the like week after I watched those, like I find myself jumping around the house. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a ghost. No, it's the broom like sticking in a weird place. Why did you leave it there, Erin? But like I love that gothic horror that just gets into your head and like makes you start questioning, what is that shadow and why is it moving closer to me? And oh my gosh.
That's funny. Yeah. I love The Haunting of Hill House. That freaked me out so much though. And it was sort of that thing where you started to second guess what I was seeing, and especially, you know, towards the end, with the bent neck woman, I was like, oh, everything I thought I knew, I don't, and now I don't know what my life is anymore.
Oh my goodness. And then Mike Flanahan does such an amazing job as a director like that. I think it's the fifth or sixth episode in it where it's like that continual shot, like in and out of the mortuary and then the house. And like, how do you do that? Like, that's just genius. I love that. I love rewatching that. Every time I get stuck on like a spooky scene, I go back to that. And I'm like, okay, this is craft. This is what I want to try to achieve.
I remember reading so many articles and watching videos after that episode just to fully understand, like, the, it's like a ballet the way they pull that off, because everyone has to be in a certain place, and it's like magic.
Oh, very much so. And I remember him tweeting about like they had to be talking to the set designers like well in advance, you know, right. It was being written, and being like, okay, we have to be able to make the house go to this, and like how to get all the pieces put together. And like, as a production stage manager, that was so fascinating to me, because so much of our scenery, you know, is just like, okay, we need to be in this, mm-hmm. you know, opera set, and then we need to change all the sets, and it's like, oh, you can have them all interconnected, and oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it was for sure. In terms of other books, I always, sort of along with The Haunting of Bly Manor, there was, Ruth Ware wrote The Turn of the Key, which is sort of an updated version of The Turn of the Screw, which is sort of like modernized and set. It follows a very similar story. It's in a house. She's a nanny. You have the kids, and weird things start happening. So, but it still kind of has that feel of, you know, the gothic horror that you would expect, but it's set in a contemporary time. Mm-hmm. But my favorite part is that the house has a poison garden. It is, which I was,
obviously every house needs that,
which I was not aware was a thing prior to reading this book, but there are such a things as poison gardens, where instead of growing like lovely flowers, you grow poisonous flowers, and you know, you have to be super careful when you go in there, because these things could kill you.
Oh gosh, yeah, and like the spores, and oh goodness, no. An updated kind of gothic twisty thing, The Nesting by CJ Cook is really good. It's got kind of that thing where it's, you've got an unreliable female narrator who like full on comes out and says that she's lying about her identity in the beginning, and like for good reasons, and reasons, I guess, TM. And then she goes to become a nanny to these two girls. Their mother passed away, and it's set in Norway. And so there's like all the fjords, and you've got the isolated, there's a house that they're staying in, well, like the manor is built, and there's all these weird things happening at the manor, and it also combines a lot of like Norwegian folk tales and like fairy tales gone horribly wrong, and then you also see it through the mother who passed away, and we don't know exactly how or why or any of those things, but we see her timeline period kind of connected with the nanny's story. And so like, I love books where it's got like the alternate timeline where you like, you know something because someone else told you, but the other person doesn't. And you're like, no, just figure this out. It's not that hard. it's beautiful. It's CJ Cook just rocked it. It's really, really good for spooky season.
That sounds good. Yeah. It's like when you watch a movie and you're like, don't open that door. What are you doing? Stay away from the door. You don't know what's back there, but I do. Yeah. So speaking of books that take place in big fancy houses, you have, you're the author of The House of Salt and Sorrows. Can you, tell our listeners a little bit about your book?
Sure. It's a young adult retake on The 12 Dancing Princesses by the Brothers Grimm. There are 12 sisters at the beginning, before the book starts. When the book actually starts, we're down to 8. And Anna Lee is the second oldest of the remaining sisters. And up until the page before the book starts, she has always assumed that her sisters' deaths have been very natural causes. One had the plague, one fell down a staircase because gothic heroine. And so she assumes, you know, their family has just had this really run of bad luck with the sisters. But the latest sister fell off of a cliff in the middle of the night, and she starts to wonder if there's actually something more sinister afoot. And as she starts to investigate that, her new stepmother has come to the house. Her father remarried. And she finds out that she's pregnant. And so she wants to kind of end the whole mourning period that the sisters have been kind of in for most of their lives. And so they start getting all these fancy dresses and stuff, and they come out of their black clothes. And one, the oldest sister, Camille, realizes she, you know, she's going to become the head of the household at some point. She needs to find a man. She wants to start going to all of these balls and things. And they find this magic portal that takes them kind of anywhere in the kingdom where these really exquisite balls are happening. And so at first, Annalie kind of goes along with this and like, oh, this is fun dancing. And then she starts to realize that something more sinister is happening in these things. And the people that they're dancing with might not be people and maybe murderers. We're not sure. And so she kind of sets out to solve all of these mysteries going on at once.
Yeah, that. That fits right in line with everything we've been talking about. Oh, yeah. I love it. Yeah. He died from seemingly natural causes, like falling down the stairs in the plague. I was like, sure, that's a thing.
Everyone does thing. That. That's a thing. It's those nightgowns. They're too long. She wasn't good at it.
There you go. See, that makes sense.
That's, yep. She was on fire from the candelabra and just fell down the stairs.
No, when you were talking about the, you know, getting out of the morning clothes and putting on their fancy party dresses, one thing in Rebecca that I am looking forward to them doing is the costume ball. Where I just, yes, the costume ball and the second Mrs. De Winter dress. I'm excited for
can't
that.
Wait to see what they come up with. Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Yes, I'm excited for that entire thing. So, well, Erin, thank you so much for coming on the podcast to thank talk about you. Gothic horror with me. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a lovely morning. Wish we could talk about this every morning.
I know. It's very rainy here in Ohio. And so I'm thinking like it's like really good weather to like drink tea and watch the Netflix Rebecca. So
absolutely.
I'm gonna have to do that today now that it's here. So
I'm wondering if I can con my 4-year-old into watching it. Be like, look at the pretty dress. There's gonna be pretty dresses. She looks like a fairy princess. It's gonna be good.
There are ghosts. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, you too.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.